There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday edition of the show. You know the line. Well, maybe you don't. The telephone and text line. If you don't, then write this down. Put it in your contacts. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. For phone calls or text, you know, like yesterday, I showed that you could do both. I had texted Bill Finch during a show, and I called Bill Finch during a show. A once-a-year phone call to the show. I'll let that baby rip yesterday. Also, using the FM Talk 106.5 app, you'll see the microphone icon on the front page, lets you record a message, emails it to the show. We can play it back here on the air with the talkback feature. All right, coming up in hour number two of the show, just a heads up here, and this was an interview before I was thrown several curveballs, not by him, but by life last week. We were going to talk to John McMillan, but we're going to talk to him today with the delay. It's okay, because I know I teased it last week. Today at 1 o'clock, Director of the Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission, John McMillan, joins us. So get your questions ready for that. And get your questions ready for this man, the hardest working man in Alabama media. The crowd goes wild. Ladies and gentlemen, from Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal, our leadoff batter, Todd Stacey. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How's it going?
It's all right. It's a Monday and things are okay.
Well, it's one of those days you're glad to be south. This South Alabama instead of Central and certainly North Alabama.
I tell you, I got a taste of that. So I kind of had a plan last week and to be up in North Mississippi and had some family stuff throw me a curveball. But finally did get up there for the weekend. But we left Saturday morning after a quick hunt in the North Mississippi Delta because we had gotten snow and sleet and the icing reports were out. So we got on the road pretty early Saturday and got down below like Grenada, Mississippi, down towards Jackson and got out of the snow and ice and then made our way home. The crew that left on Sunday morning, they may be listening here too. There's some guys from down here. I don't know how long their trip took, but I was talking to them before lunch and at 8 something last night, they were still around Meridian trying to get home from up there. So we got out just in time, but I know there's the icing thing, the snow and sleet, we think that's cool. Freezing rain, I got no time for that. I can't deal with that.
Yeah, we have avoided. It's really cold. It's about 25 degrees in Montgomery now, but it's dry. All the rain dried up before the freeze came. So
good.
Got that to be grateful for. But I got three trees down, man. We had a pretty I don't know whether it was a downblast or tornado or what, but three trees down. Luckily, no huge damage. But
like,
yeah, man,
like big trees, like big trees at your house or what?
Yeah, there's big old oak tree in the back. I'm really sad about two of my crepe myrtles came down, and including this ancient one. This thing's over 100 years old, and I'm afraid it's gone. So, but look. Nobody was hurt. That's important, and no real damage. And you know, silver lining. Maybe I'll get a new roof out of it.
See, do you have? Hey, by the way, I know we're supposed to do all this stuff, but y'all, Todd and I are talking. Are you a fortified? You can do a fortified roof on this new one?
Well, I'll do whatever insurance wants. You know, and can. I mean, the best that they can do. We don't necessarily need that around here. I didn't have.
You don't. You really? There are never tornadoes in your area, Todd.
I mean, sometimes downblast is about the worse we get.
I'm just telling you, look into it. Look into it. Okay. You have these, because now I think it's available. I think it's available for y'all there. You go to Strength in Alabama Homes. Like, I'm telling Todd Stacy anything. But you go to Strength in Alabama Homes, and you can get in the, like, it's a lottery system.
Interesting.
So we'll talk about it off air. All right. I do want to kick this off here with, I saw the headline from y'all on the email here, that it was a shakeup. Your headline here, Wall, Brooks, and others shakeup GOP primaries on final day to qualify. So what is this? Is this the deal you just wait till the last minute to come in and say, and me too?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a wild, I guess, kind of last 48 hours of candidate qualifying. It's always kind of fun whenever there are deadlines like that. I mean, so if you don't have your name into the party in your paperwork, whether it's Republican Party or Democratic Party, by 5 o'clock on Friday, then you can't run. And they still have to go through ballot challenges and things like that. And are they qualified? But that's the deadline. And so everybody knows it. And so most candidates sign up way early, right? I mean, think about, you know, going back to late summer, early fall, even before qualifying technically opened. But John Wall, so we had some surprises. One was John Wall. Of course, that kind of happened the night before on Thursday night about 8 o'clock, on the President Trump's Truth Social account, he randomly endorsed John Wall for lieutenant governor. The reason I say random is John Wall was not running for lieutenant governor. He had flirted with it. He had been a rumored candidate, but had told me and told a lot of people that he decided against it for family reasons, which that happens. So the very last minute, when I say last minute, it was like 4:59 on Friday. I was calling him from our studio because I wanted to have everything accurate. And so he waited to the very last minute. Of course, he also had to resign as chairman of the Republican Party and things like that. So anyway, now we're off.
Okay, but waiting to 1 minute till, is that for, because there's other things in play, or is that for the drama of it? Is that for the, you know, like,
a
show like 24, the clock's ticking down?
It seemed like the drama to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially considering he's the chairman of the Republican Party, his office is right there. He has to walk across the hall. Who knows? Well, I'm sure you'll have him on. I'm looking forward to having him on to ask him a lot of questions. The thing, though, that, you know, just in my political mind starts going, and, you know, why would you wait to the last minute?
I don't know.
Why would you do any of this?
Isn't that y'all listen, because Todd will give us some wisdom, because, you know, money is the mother's milk of politics, and the earlier you declare, the more you can, like, block out others, and you can get the checks from these different groups. It seems to put you in the back seat here.
Right. So why would you do that voluntarily? So, and was the President Trump endorsement really random? I mean, did he have any idea? Because it all just seems a little, you know, too perfect. And my thought is, you know, we are already seeing attacks come out on John Wall. Mm-hmm. And he does. He has some questionable things in his past, not like committing crimes and things, just like
the ID thing or whatever.
The ID and having a fake ID and voting and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's some questions we've all tried to get answered before, but kind of it never fully gets answered. Well, when you're a candidate, those things seem to get vetted. They tend to get vetted pretty good. So you're already seeing Wes Allen, the Secretary of State, who's running for lieutenant governor, you just come out guns a-blazing. I expect all kinds of different attacks, you know, accusations to be made. But it's our job in the press to figure all that out. Now, it's one thing to be the chairman of the Republican Party and a somewhat obscure, you know, person from North Alabama. If you're running to be second in command and maybe a, you know, candidate for governor one day, it's our job to figure out these questions about identification and sovereign citizen and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, I don't know if this is going to be, I don't know if it matters much. I mean, if all the attacks come out, but he's got the Trump endorsement, I don't know. We'll see what happens here.
Well, and the thing about the Trump endorsement, we talked about this a little before. So think about Barry Moore. He's got that Trump endorsement. He's also got a really healthy campaign account growing every day. It's only gotten better now with donations coming in. He's also got Club for Growth. who can spend money on his behalf. So he'll have the money, whether it's him personally or groups that support him, just to let people know that this endorsement happened. It's not like every voter is tuned into Truth Social and awaiting the president's whims.
Right.
You've got to get the message out there. We've obviously seen in the past how it didn't matter. So I fully expect most voters at the end of the day to know that Barry Moore is endorsed by Donald Trump, because he got millions of dollars to make that happen. I'm not sure the same thing is true about John Wall, and you know how much money he'll have to do that, whether there will be outside groups. I don't think the president is going to be deploying people. I mean, you're talking about a lieutenant governor's race in a solidly red state, you know, so it's not necessarily a sure thing. And it'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and let's do this. We'll compare and contrast here, because like Mary writes in her story over at AlabamaDailyNews.com, Wall, a butterfly farmer who lives in Limestone County, is also chairman of the Alabama Public Library Service Board, which oversees state funding for local libraries. And then let's compare him with the man who would be governor, former football coach and Senator Tuberville. This is an interesting contrast between governor and lieutenant governor.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think it was already going to be a pretty tight race. I think, you know, Wes Allen was clearly kind of pulling out ahead, especially after A.G. McCarron said he was not going to run. But, you know, it was going to be a tight race. And all candidates had to do a serious work getting their names out there. And that still remains the case, including John Wall. Just because you have the Trump endorsement doesn't mean anybody knows who you are.
Right.
And so it's still going to be it's a very, very crowded race. I would say there are, you know, four top tier candidates. But, you know, of course, it goes back to the old saying about, you know, nobody in Alabama runs for lieutenant governor because they really want to be lieutenant governor.
Yep.
You run to set yourself up for next time. That's not really easy to do, by the way. I think the last person that successfully made that happen was Siegelman. But, you know, to think that many people are trying to set themselves up to run for governor 4 years from now or 8 years from now, depending on how long Tuberville wants to stay around, makes for some interesting. Hey, we always knew it was going to be an interesting year. But it's living up to those expectations.
Okay. Let's speaking of here's my pivot from discussing the coach here to the story you'll have up from Alex here. The U.S. House voted to repeal a law on Thursday that allows Senator Tommy Tuberville and other senators to sue the government for seizing their phone records without the knowledge. That was that operation. Well, I forget what it was called. Freeze them out or whatever it was. What's the story here? The rest of this.
Well, yeah, if you remember, as they were funding the government last time around, ending the government shutdown, they had to pass all these bills and they made a deal and all that. And when something like that happens, little things get buried, right? And sometimes it's easy to bury things in such a mountain of legislative paperwork. Well, slipped into that legislation that reopened the government was a provision that allowed Tuberville and seven other Republican senators to sue for up to $500,000 if their phone records were obtained without prior notification. So it was, I'm not sure why it was inserted. I'm not sure whose idea. We certainly don't insinuate that it was Tuberville's idea. He just happened to be on that list of senators whose phone records were accessed in that Jack Smith federal investigation. Had nothing to do with January 6th, which everybody, you know, saw as a real faux pas for the Department of Justice. I think they already have had some hearings about it. But the objections to that, which first of all, senators did not know they were voting on that, right? They're voting to reopen the government. They had no idea this was slipped in. And then the House really had no choice but to pass it to fund the government. But they immediately said, House members from both sides of the House said, no, this is, we can't create sweetheart deals for senators. Everybody had the same, you know, rights and everything like that. They didn't need to be treated like everybody else. And that's why. And so the House has just been waiting to undo this. And every time I've heard Tuberville talk about it, he says, yeah, we don't want anything special. And so So, yeah, I think it'll pass one way or the other that these senators don't get treated differently as anybody else whose phone records got subpoenaed.
Very good. All right. Tell folks these stories we're talking about a whole lot more over at your website. Tell them about the website. Tell them about how to get signed up for the email.
It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. You can sign up right there at the homepage for that email. It comes out every day. And, you know, we don't have Capital Journal tonight. We're still, like I said, my power's still out. So we've still got some stuff going on. But we'll be back Tuesday. And hopefully we'll know within the next hour whether the legislature's coming back Tuesday as planned. But you can follow all of that along at aldailynews.com.
As always, man, I appreciate your time. And hopefully your power gets back on and things go better in Montgomery. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, buddy. See you.
All right. There goes Todd Stacey. And we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:25, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. This segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Trey at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Thinking about that first month of the year coming to an end. If you made a New Year's resolution to get organized around the house, I've told you over time, the pro tip here, easier to organize, fewer things. If you've got junk in the house or a storage unit or in a garage, garages are cool things. I don't know, a lot of people don't know this, but you can put vehicles in them. Well, pretty cool. If you get the junk out of there, you can put your vehicle in there. So if you've been thinking about something like that, you made that pledge, right? That resolution back at the end of 2025, going into 2026, and said, listen, get the junk out of here. I got a guy who can make it happen. And not just when I say in here, Trey will say, Sean, remind folks I get the big stuff outside the house too. So let me do this, what Trey said. Big stuff like above ground pools, storage sheds, trampolines, big stuff that's not in a house, but around a house, you want it gone, they can handle that as well. So get that New Year's resolution accomplished right here in the first month of the year and set an appointment with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And it's a beautiful thing too. When you pick up the phone, their name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or you go to their website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. They're going to find from you the day you want to do this and the time you want to do it, and they'll work with you to set an appointment. And when they come, I've used them personally, used them with this radio station. All you got to do is point at the junk you want to disappear, and they'll quote your price right there on the spot. You say yes, they get to work, and it's gone out of your life and done right then. So make the appointment for whenever you want to get it done, but make that appointment today. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, we'll get to some of these texts in just a second. I do want to say another story up at Alabama Daily News. I thought this was interesting, and I heard Dan and Dalton talk about it a good bit this morning, and Jeff some as well. The Choose Act, right? So this has been at loggerheads here between the Choose Act and the AHSAA. Maybe they found a solution, but it seems odd to me. It says a controversy over how Alabama's education savings accounts affect athletic eligibility appears to have been settled after the Alabama High School Athletic Association announced that financial aid, including Choose Act vouchers, won't affect when students can play. So this was the big question, right? The kid has Choose Act money, goes to the other school, can they play? The director, Heath Harmon, said in a press release came out on Friday, said funds from the Choose Act, Accountability Act, tuition assistance, teacher reductions, and scholarships will no longer impact athletic eligibility, end quote. Now, how that law will change or affect the lawsuit filed by Governor Ivey and Speaker Ledbetter remains unclear. The lawsuit filed in September challenged AHSAA's earlier determination that the Choose Act funding should be treated as financial aid, making high school athletes ineligible to play sports for a one-year period. A judge in November ordered the parties into mediation. There you go. So there's a mediation thing. Remember in the state address, the last one from Governor Ivey, the governor said she would support a proposed Let the Kids Play Act through that. So it's a bill and the title had been filed. No bill with that title had been filed, but they said there was an act out there maybe they were working on, but it seems like they worked a deal. This is the thing also, in addition, the story got my attention. It said beginning in the, so also in this, beginning in the 26-27 school year, public and private schools are now separated into different classifications and will compete separately in postseason play. Here's a quote from Harmon, the director, said, "The Central Board has approved a championship model that applies only to postseason play. Its purpose is to expand opportunity and strengthen the overall championship experience for student-athletes across Alabama. All championships will be played together, both public and private, at our championship venues." So he said public and private schools continue to play each other during the regular season, but it won't be in the postseason. Seems hinky to me, right? So you play the teams and you could do that in your regular schedule, but for the championships, it's going to be private schools and their own championship and public schools. I don't think that's, I think that's going to stand up to you. 343-0106. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Great time to check in with my buddy, the Admiral there at LCM Motorcars, David McCrary, and talk inventory. Talk you out getting inventory. What's up, man?
We are. We're trying to buy as many as we can in the next few days. We've had a great great couple of weeks, and we got truckloads should be here, I think, tomorrow morning, if not late tonight, and we'll probably have another two or three truckloads towards the end of the week. So looking forward to that, and we'll have plenty of vehicles for anything anybody wants.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and to think ahead, too. I mean, you got those vehicles now and going forward. I mean, people start thinking about tax time and get a little cash back and finding that next vehicle.
Yeah, tax time's here. I mean, it's people are already starting to, you know, get everything filed, and a lot of the places will give them some money up front, you know. So it's ready to go.
Tell them how to find you.
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. Give us a call, 251-375-0068, or just go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com.
Thanks, David.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
And you too. There goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Grab a couple texts here, and then I want to, let's see. Yeah, we'll go to text first, I guess. David says, basically the public schools last week voted to give themselves a participation trophy in the playoffs because they're too scared to play private schools. And have we learned a little something about separation of people in schools here? Butterknife, I think it's going to stand. High school sports recruiting is getting ridiculous. Now with the CHOOSE Act, if you're a great player and you're at Vigor, you can choose to go to Spanish Fort. It's just going to cause a nightmare of the future. Michael says the government school AEA members did it to punish private schools and the children of parents who support school choice. I heard this news on the way home from watching my son's private school. News on the way home from watching my son's private school compete in the South Regional AHSAA bowling playoffs. Oh, very cool. For MAC-T. They were in bowl. You know, okay, I'll read the rest of this, and then I'll lament some. So I guess MAC-T was playing in the bowling playoffs in Vestavia Hills. The boys competed great, but unfortunately came up just shy of making the finals. I told my son about it that night, and to say he was upset was an understatement. He realized that his team would have far and away won the state championship, but said it wouldn't have been real because it isn't all schools. Yeah, I agree as well. But just the bowling thing, you know, it was way back when I went to school, 1980s, it was football, baseball, basketball, track and field, and soccer. We had tennis and golf. I played golf and I played football. But to look now, I mean, bowling being there, the fishing thing, I mean, if I knew that, if I could have been, like, we have some great fishing teams here locally, and then you go to the collegiate, if I could have, I mean, what could I have done at the University of Alabama if I could have done fishing as, like, a varsity sport? let alone what we're doing with archery here in the schools. I mean, this just wasn't there when I was a kid. I'm glad that it's there at school. I didn't know bowling was also in there. But, yeah, I think it's going to be – it's going to be so they can play each other during the normal season, but they can't go to the championships against each other. It bothers me. Local rapper said, I think it's a win for private school students, parents, and fans if we make it to the playoffs when we don't have to pass through metal detector to enter an athletic event. Plus, the ladies can leave their clear purses at home, not to mention that we don't have to pay an entrance fee to a stadium that our property taxes are already paid for and our children don't attend public schools. So you think it's a win. Michael thinks it's a loss. I get what you're saying, local rapper, but I think the kids should compete, all kids in Alabama, in an age group and playing a sport, should compete against all the other kids that do that. All right. Of course, we can't, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, for a long time to come. But watching what happened in Minneapolis over the weekend and listen to the discussion, see some online, but like I said, I was somewhat disconnected, not completely disconnected from the news, but wasn't just inhaling news all weekend. But listening to some of that, and then, of course, today on FM Talk, just kind of, you know, what we know here about this shooting and the killing of this Preddy, Alex Preddy in Minneapolis. So, you know, you got a Border Patrol agent was forced to fire on a man during an armed encounter. This is what the narrative's coming out here. I'm going to kind of pose this to you in a little bit. But you know, federal immigration in Minneapolis, again, has turned deadly here. Border Patrol agent forced to fire on a man during an armed encounter. Of course, that sent tensions even higher in Minneapolis. Renewed protests for federal law enforcement, ICE to leave Minnesota. Federal agents have been in Minneapolis, what now, like a month or so, carrying on their immigration enforcement operation. The feds were operating, so in the Preddy case, in an area that has increasingly become a protest flashpoint, which tells me that is an area, if ICE is going there, then most likely has illegal immigrants in that area. That area has flared up a couple times, just that area of Minneapolis. And I'm reading this from stories up there. I don't know the lay of the land there. Agents were in the middle of a targeted enforcement action when a crowd began to gather around. It's already a tense situation. This is according to eyewitnesses and video and all that. So, and that's when this Alex Preddy shows up there. Okay, this is the narrative is told by DHS, told by people that are not DHS, people that are they're reporting on it, that he entered the scene at that point. It was already kind of picked up. It was tense, and then he arrived, right? He was near the agents as the operation was unfolding. In a crowded environment, protesters, officers were already pushing against each other when he comes into the scene here. And quickly, what had been a standoff between ICE and law enforcement and the protesters, all of a sudden, boom, you've seen the video turn into a scene of chaos. The videos, and their videos plural here, show a close quarters, right? They're fighting it out, a struggle in the crowd. In multiple clips, the officers can be heard yelling. And so different videos, you can hear him yelling, he's got a gun, as Preddy is forced to the ground. Okay, you've seen that. So now he goes to the ground. This is like, and it's going to be the problem, though. There's go through this. The officer that was in the video seemed to be reaching into Preddy's waistband, pulling out what turned out to be a 9mm semi-auto, which I think is important because the story, you know, when I first read the story, it's a 9mm semi-automatic pistol. You know, they often, like, put extra stuff in there for flair, but I think this might be important. They said that's when it became deadly. If you slow the footage down, it looks like as a weapon is retrieved by an ICE officer, the gun slide, this is one of the video angles. Like I'm saying, I do not know, and we'll get to that in a second, everything that happened. But the slide on the gun, right, so the action on that gun appears to move. It said, you know, and if it moves, one of two things is happening, right? Owners, of you're either using that to eject round out of the chamber, or the gun's being fired, and it's coming back to put another round in the chamber. This is just some of the slowdown video. It looks like the officer's like pulling the gun out of the waistband. He's open carrying. Maybe it discharged then. Then you've seen that scene where the agent, they already got him down. So he pulled the gun, they got him down. Then it was like, what, 2 seconds later? Then the officers, the ICE agent, fires multiple rounds at pretty at close range. And that was crazy, too. You had officers and bystanders just right there. The gunfire stops in there, and Preddy is motionless on the ground, so we figure he's dead at that point or close to it. So DHS said in the presser that Border Patrol agents were engaged in a federal arrest action that was already underway. It was not a random patrol when Preddy approached them. At that point, this is coming from Noam, and the presser said they were there on the federal arrest action, not random patrol, when Preddy approached them, armed with a handgun and two magazines and no ID. However, there's another video, y'all, you can see that appears to show Preddy holding a phone and not a handgun. And they both can be black, and so they're not the same thing. One doesn't look like the other, right? So, you know, DHS said he's got the gun, but then maybe the video is it's in his waistband. They're trying to take it out of his waistband. The government version of the events, the officers attempted to disarm Preddy, but he violently resisted. That's why they had to, I guess, all get on him and turn into a dangerous confrontation. The agent fired at what the department characterized as, quote, defensive shots. By the way, the officer that was the shooting is an 8-year veteran. People were asking how long, what kind of training, but said 8-year veteran of Border Patrol. Then you had Minneapolis National Guard troops deployed to assist local police, units sent to both the shooting site, then they went to that nearby building we see in all the videos. It's become the focal point for the demonstration. One of the videos from a bystander that AP had, you know, like different news groups have picked up different cell phone videos. I've seen this one. Like I said, I don't know the time stamp. We're going to get to this. One of the videos that the AP has shows Preddy reaching for and holding a cell phone, not the pistol. The police chief up there, Brian O'Hare, said police believe Preddy was a lawful gun owner. And in addition, y'all, Minnesota is an open carry state, so he could have just, you could have it on your waistband or on your hip. You can carry. So the open carry thing is, which is surprising to me for Minnesota, but I mean, it's that they let that ride, which they should, but because, you know, there's that Second Amendment thing. That Second Amendment in action, what we're talking about. Plus, like last week, when I talked to April Marie Fogle, all the people got upset that these protesters in some of the neighborhoods were standing in their front yards holding their rifles. Yeah, you got a right to do that. You cannot like it. And do I think it's a dangerous thing to ramp up the? Yes, but they do have the right to do it. So in that pressure, they're trying to, and the investigators now trying to figure out when the weapon became visible to the ICE agents, whether Preddy was in the process of drawing it during the confrontation or was he getting the cell phone? I just leave it at this, and we can talk about it on the text line and on the phone line, 251-343-0106. In a world that's dominated by social media and smartphones, both sides, we see this so many times, want to rush to judgment, right? There'll be one side that wants to rush to exonerate the agent before the actual investigation identifies all the facts. Or you've got the people that want to condemn him 100%. The protesters are quick to claim that Preddy was holding a phone and not posing a threat to officers, and it was all on ICE's hands. So one side of it is that the officer did nothing wrong. Everything was on the up and up. The other one was that you see it from the left here, that Preddy was just holding the phone and not posing a threat to officers. I think if the officers would have known it was a phone, then they would. But kids, here's the problem. Only one of the, like I said to Jeff at the end of his show, only one of those narratives can be true. Only one. Was the gun in the waistband? Was the gun in his hand? Was a cell phone in his hand? What did the officers see? What did they know at that point? So I got a crazy idea. Why don't we wait till we have an examination of all the video footage, witness statement, the forensics, and figure out what actually happened versus all sides saying it's 100% this way or that way. I know that's not a popular idea, but we get to the text line. We come back at 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1253 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday, 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. Segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Clint Jamison at Adventure Earth Bicycles. Maybe that was another one of the New Year's resolutions. You can get out and get some exercise. And I have told you this kind of counterintuitive thing about e-bikes and me getting more exercise. But speaking of e-bikes right now, too, sale going on right now on the Denago City 2 e-bike. It's got a 500-watt, 48-volt battery and a Class 3 e-bike, so you can travel up to 20 miles per hour with the throttle up or up to 28 miles per hour with pedal assist and throttle. You can do that right now, $1,400, normally $1,900 on the website. But what I was saying about getting more exercise is if you get like a regular bike, right? You get a regular bike and you're going to ride that regular bike and it's not going to be fun. And you're going to ride it fewer times. The e-bike thing for me, because there's that like eco mode that mine has where it just kind of kicks in on heels or if you're in soft sand or something like that, because I ride mine off-road mostly, it kicks in then. So the riding is fun. So what you do is you ride further and ride more days, even with the assist, than you would with the regular bike, and you get more exercise. But it's been a game changer for me over the last 3 years. Go see the big selection of e-bikes in stock and what he calls the Amish bikes, the non-electric bikes, at a locally owned bike shop that does bike service, all that. Gives you the advice from people that they live, eat, and breathe these bicycles. Adventure Earth Bicycles, Clint Jamison and the crew. They're the corner of Little Flower and Airport in Midtown. They're online at adventure-earth.com. Right, to the text line here. Let's see. Fire Dog said, trying to text, but my phone is frozen. Get it? Ha, ha, ha. Get it frozen because technology and it's cold out. I cracked me up. Pretty funny. I got that call from Mother earlier, Fire Dog, that her computer was frozen. I said, like cold? She's like, no. I'm like, okay, reboot. Butter Knife said, Sean, I've seen the video of the ICE officer removing the man's gun. I've seen the video of the man holding his cell phone in the air. You're saying there's a video of the man on the ground reaching for his gun? If so, please, where can I find it? I didn't say anything of the sort. That's what I'm saying, Butter Knife. I think all sides come into a judgment. Let's get the full investigation into this. That's why I said about the slide, if is the gun being removed and the gun fires? This is what frame-by-frame stuff is being done with the investigators. That's something that needs to be seen. And then goes on and said, that changes a lot of what people are saying in the liberal media if that's the case. Yeah, I don't know. This is my point is, go through the narrative, is just over the weekend, everybody had it completely figured out one way or the other. Both things can't be true, right? Like I said in my statement, that both things can't be true. So let's wait and see which one is true. Jerry, downtown Fort Morgan, they need to consider sending some mounted officers up there for crowd control. That's true. We'll see that during Mardi Gras. You know, you hear me talk to the sheriff about it. I'm like, I don't get it. You know, deputies or officers can come through, and you know they've got batons and shields and pepper spray and all that stuff, and crowds kind of move, but don't move a lot. You let some horses come in at Mardi Gras, and it's like we're parting the Red Sea here. It's something. Let's see here. Unnamed texture. St. Michael's coach interviewed for the Bills job. It's a question of resources. Always thought unfair to play privates. Did you really think we could remove 20 mil without trouble? You ain't seen nothing yet, I hope. I don't know what that means exactly. Tim says, Sean, if you open carry, which is legal, are you going to wrestle with police when you got that weapon on you? I believe you're taking your chances. Listen, there's a whole bunch of discussion here. It's like, did the guy, and Dan Brennan's pulled up some stories too of this Preddy and what he was doing and what he was associated with. There's a lot of, like, if he wasn't there, this wouldn't happen. 100% agree with that, but we're not talking about being, like, say, well, if you never left your house, I mean, yeah, if you never left your house, certain things wouldn't happen. But did they shoot it? Did they think he was shooting at them? What happened? We got to go through the video and see. Avett says, Sean, wasn't the SIG he was carrying the model with a twitchy trigger? I don't know. And is that the SIG that doesn't have the, a lot of good concealed carry and self-protection handguns don't have a safety on them, right? I don't, but see, this is the thing. I'm with you, Avett, but we have to see all this video. I don't know yet. Let's see, unnamed texter here, I think. Why shouldn't initial support be with law enforcement? They are there to do a job. If you want to protest, protest, and hear signs and voice at a distance. Once again, I don't, like I said, if he wouldn't have been there, this wouldn't have happened. But we got to move past that and then figure out what happened. Does that matter? Says, was a lawful order to stop impeding an investigation given? Yes. Was there an active resistance after lawful order? Yes. Was a weapon identified during the active resistance? Yes. I fully support the Constitution and all amendments, but the criteria for action was met. All right, we'll get to some of these later in the hour. John McMillan joins us next.